Маю мажі, маю воли, маю батіг черемховий. Від негоди кожух старий, ще й пестрові шаровари.
Гей, гей, і я з вами щумаками, бурлаками. Гей, гей, і я з вами щумаками, бурлаками.
Проб'ю руби, та й не гроші, проб'ю два, та й не журюся. На багату подивлюся, а на бідній оженюся.
Гей, гей, і я з вами щумаками, бурлаками. Гей, гей, і я з вами щумаками, бурлаками.
Бідна жінка спати ляже, ївши сухар, пивши воду. А багата тобі скаже, взявши гроші, дай вигоду.
Гей, гей, і я з вами щумаками, бурлаками. Гей, гей, і я з вами щумаками, бурлаками.
Пропив мажі, пропив віз, пропив все те, що привіз.
Гей, гей, і я з вами щумаками, бурлаками. Гей, гей, і я з вами щумаками, бурлаками.
Гей!
And that is a song called Hey Hey, Iya z Vame, which means Hey Hey, I'm with you. And that comes from a brand new CD, at least a CD recently received here at Nash Holo, so I guess it's brand new to us. And the CD is called Kazka Lirinaka Sashka Muzika I Pisni. And for the Ukrainian Empire, that translates as the music and songs of the storyteller and lirinik called Sashko. And a lirinik, by the way, is somebody who plays a lira, which is a musical instrument that is essentially a hurdy-gurdy. And this is Sashko came to Canada not long ago. He was here just last month as part of that Ukraine train. He is quite a storyteller, of course, and a musician. And there are some great stories about him, which I hope to be able to share with you in the near future. Вітаю вас всіх, шановні радіослухачі, на радіопередачі «Наш голос». Говорить Павліна Макорій. Дякую, що рішили перебути зі мною наступну годину. Hello there, and welcome to «Наш голос» Ukrainian Roots Radio. I'm Paulette Demchuk-Makori, your host, по-українське, in Ukrainian, that is Павліна, and I am delighted to have you with me. Whether you're tuning in on AM, FM, shortwave, online, or in-flight, or to the podcast, a very warm welcome to you. Вітаю. We have a great program lined up for you. We've got Vasil Pavlovsky coming by with Cultural Capsule, and he'll be giving us a bit of a flashback to the first Canadian pioneers, Ukrainian Canadian pioneers, that arrived in Canada some 120 years ago. And Natalia Buchok will be by with Ukrainian Food Flair, and she'll be sharing some very interesting historical trivia and more rich recipes from the cookbook of Olya Sinatovich dating back to 1929. On Ukraine News Outlook, Keith has some stories on the arrest of the former Prime Minister Yulia Tymoshenko and also some information about the communications industry in Ukraine. As well, we'll be airing part two of the Eugene Wilson story, Goodbye Ukraine, that comes to us courtesy the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. And of course, we'll have our proverb of the week, other items of interest, and great Ukrainian music. And coming up now is another selection from that CD by Sashko and the Ukrainian dance from the city of Kherson, which is a city in southern Ukraine. It's an important port on the Black Sea and the Dnipro River, and it is the home of a major shipbuilding industry. Incidentally, it was founded in 1778 by Grigory Potemkin on orders of the Russian Empress Catherine, and the name Kherson is derived from an ancient Greek colony founded some 2,500 years ago in the southwestern part of Crimea. Here again is Sashko with Khersonsky Kozachok.
Oh, Radiocast.ca – це наша адреса в інтернеті. Українська радіопрограма з Ванкувера «Четверта хвиля».
Ukrainian programming, the fourth wave from the Burnaby Mountain.
Ми виходимо на хвилі 91 FM в Ванкувері. Також ловіть наш потік через веб-сайт cjsf.ca.
The Cubasonics from Edmonton from their CD Big Beat Music and Old Lubka. That was a snappy traditional dance tune based on a 78 RPM recording of the Ukrainska Selska Orchestra from the 1920s. And speaking of the 1920s. And now, Ukrainian Food Flair with Natalia Buchok and a taste of Galician cuisine from 1929.
Вітаємо! Welcome to Ukrainian Food Flair on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. You know, in exploring these recipes of Olha's, we learned something about the culture of Lviv in 1929 and something of Olha's life experiences. My own view of Ukraine in 1929, based admittedly on family stories of life in the village, was that it was somewhat isolated from the rest of Europe. Olha's recipes show me that there was more cross-pollination of culture than I would have thought. For example, the following compound butter, titled English Butter in Olha's cookbook, calls for Chester cheese. Chester cheese is also known as Cheshire cheese, and the cheese of Cheshire, a county in England, is one of the oldest recorded named cheeses in British history. Cheshire cheese is dense and semi-hard and has a moist, crumbly texture and a mild, salty taste. Cheshire was the most popular cheese on the market in the late 18th century. Witness the following that I stumbled across. This is a quote from the Farmer's Magazine of 1857. The county of Chester has been famous for a long period for its excellent cheese. It is stated that the Countess Constance of Chester, in the reign of Henry II in 1100 AD, though the wife of the king's first cousin, kept a herd of kine, and made good cheese, three of which she presented to the Archbishop of Canterbury. Personally, I would never say no to a good cheese gift, and looks like the Archbishop didn't either. So to continue with compound butters, here's Olha's recipe for English butter. Puree together 2 tablespoons of butter, 2 teaspoons of English mustard, 4 tablespoons of Chester cheese, and 1/2 teaspoon of white pepper. Salt to taste and mix. Then form into a roll, wrap in saran wrap or wax paper, and refrigerate. Later, you can slice the roll into rounds to spread on canapés. Now, obviously, Olha didn't have saran wrap as it wasn't invented until 1953. This is my own modern addition to the recipe. Onward and upward. Butter with ham. Take 1/2 pound of ham, and if you have a meat grinder, grind the ham. If you don't have a meat grinder, you can ask your butcher to do it for you, or you can use good old muscle power and finely mince the ham. Once the ham is minced, Olha directs us to rub the ground ham through a sieve. However, I can just see the nightmare that this could turn into. Ham stuck in the mesh of your sieve, the curses that will resound. I'm guessing the intent is to have a very finely ground ham, almost of a pâté texture. At any rate, once you have this as finely ground as possible, add 1/2 pound of butter. Mix well and use for tea or breakfast. This is Natalia Buchok with Food Flair on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio asking you, can you say Chester Cheshire Cheese 5 times fast?
Thanks, Natalia. Join us again next week for Ukrainian Food Flair with Sylvia Pidraziak-Molnar here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio.
Hello, I'm Vasily Pavlovsky, and this is Cultural Capsule, especially for Nash Holos. Before Clifford Sifton, the Minister of Canada's Interior, immigration policies came into effect in 1896, opening the doors to thousands of immigrants to Canada from Ukraine. There were 2 brave souls who had ventured from their homes in the village of Nebiliv, which is now Rozhnativsky Rayon of Ivano-Frankivsk Oblast in western Ukraine. Like so many others who had farmed in their homeland, the acreage which they had possessed, a total of not much more than 1 acre, was seldom enough to support a family. Having heard of Canada offering 160 acres, those 2 men arrived in Quebec City on the SS Oregon on September 7, 1891, leaving Nebiliv with their friend Yurko Panishchak to explore Canada. Panishchak, short of money, was turned back by officials in Hamburg, though the other 2 men arrived in Quebec and then traveled by train west to Winnipeg. Those 2 men were Vasil Alignac and Ivan Pilipi. Both were born in 1859, thus making them in their early 30s by the time they arrived in Canada as Canada's first recognized Ukrainian immigrants. Once in Manitoba, they went to work for Mennonite communities near Gretna, Manitoba, to make some money to bring their families over. A year after their arrival, Pilipi returned home and wished to return to Canada as soon as possible, but the laws of Austria considered his encouragement of others to join him and Alignac in Canada as agitation, and sentenced him to a month in jail. While Pilipiev sat in jail, Alignac remained in Canada, only later to return in 1894. Even he faced difficulties in returning to Canada. Arriving in Hamburg, he did not have sufficient funds to pay for his entire family's passage, and had to return to Nebiliv in order to raise the funds to do so. When he finally did return to Canada, the public relations campaign, which Pilipiev did time for, had pulled together a group of 33 persons from their home village, which became known as the Nebiliv Group, most of which settled in their locality of Edna Star from 1892 to 1894 and later. In 1936, Pilipiev died in an accident and is buried in Chipman, Alberta, and his farmhouse is part of the exhibit at the Ukrainian Cultural Heritage Village east of Edmonton. While Alignac lived to the age of 97 and was survived by 3 sons, 4 daughters, 51 grandchildren, 62 great-grandchildren, and 1 great-grandchild. I'm Vasily Pavlovsky, and this week's Cultural Capsule features Canada's first 2 officially recognized immigrants from Ukraine, Ivan Pilipiev and Vasily Alignac.
You're listening to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio, broadcasting from Vancouver Island, Canada, for PCJ Radio.
Ukrainian News Outlook. Coming up, chaos surrounding the Tymoshenko trial. We have two special reports from Kiev. And Ukraine's communication company to sell off mobile business. I'm Keith Perron. This week, Ukraine has been in the headlines across Europe after the ex-prime minister, Yulia Tymoshenko, was arrested last Friday. The European Union, the United States, and other countries have been requesting Ukrainian authorities to let her out on bail during the trial, which began earlier this week. Hundreds of Tymoshenko's supporters have been camping out in front of the courthouse where the trial has been taking place, asking for her immediate release and shouting to show support for her when she arrives. We now have two special reports from Kiev. First, Mark Rossman tells us what transpired on her first court appearance. Then, Carol Woolson reports on when the trial resumed on Wednesday.
A judge has turned down a request by lawyers for former Ukrainian Prime Minister Yulia Tymoshenko to free her from detention during her trial for abuse of power. It came as hundreds of supporters gathered outside the court calling for her release. Police were deployed in large numbers to ensure security in one of Kiev's main streets, where many of Tymoshenko's followers have camped out. She was placed into custody on Friday for contempt of court after repeatedly refusing to cooperate with proceedings. Her husband said he hadn't seen his wife over the weekend. "I hope the authorities will be clever enough to change these measures and that she will be freed," he said before this morning's hearing. Tymoshenko argues the charges against her are politically motivated. She's accused of illegally agreeing a gas contract with Russia, damaging the economy. This analyst says if Tymoshenko is convicted and sentenced to a long prison term, it may trigger a serious political crisis inside the establishment. The former prime minister was arrested in court and taken to a detention center. She'd refused to stand up for the judge and repeatedly accused him of being a puppet for President Yanukovych. One of the main forces behind the 2004 Orange Revolution, Tymoshenko narrowly lost to Yanukovych in last year's presidential election. Her detention's been condemned by the EU and the US.
The trial of the former Ukrainian Prime Minister Yulia Tymoshenko has resumed in Kiev. Hundreds of people gathered outside the courthouse. There was a standoff between her supporters, her political opponents, and the riot police. Tymoshenko came back to court after spending the weekend in custody on charges of contempt. She's accused of abuse of power, but claims the proceedings are politically motivated. The judge heeded prosecution calls for her to be kept in custody during the trial. The court made the decision at our request, she says. We've declared our legal position, but it's not fair for the defendant and her attorneys to state that they don't understand the basis of the accusation. Tymoshenko was a central figure in the Orange Revolution of 2004. The movement overturned current President Viktor Yanukovych's then victory in the election. Tymoshenko claims her trial is an attempt to stop her standing again.
Those two reports were from Mark Rossman and Carol Wolfson in Kiev. As I mentioned a moment ago, the European Union has been calling on Ukrainian authorities to release her on bail. Calls have also been made to the Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych. Yanukovych on Thursday defended the criminal court action against his political foe and refused to interfere in her trial. Replying specifically to the Czech president, Václav Kraus, Yanukovych said the Ukrainian court system was independent and unbiased. "I cannot and will not interfere in the work of the Ukrainian courts," he wrote in a letter to Kraus, the text of which was published on Yanukovych's presidential website. In a letter to Yanukovych on Tuesday, Kraus asked for his assurance that the trial was not being used to settle personal and political differences inside Ukrainian politics. The Visegrad Group, or the V4, are also concerned about the state of rule of law in Ukraine in relation to the arrest of the former prime minister. In an official statement, the group, which comprises of Poland, the Czech Republic, Hungary, and Slovakia, wrote, "We believe that fair, transparent, and independent judicial procedure should be granted to all Ukrainians," reads the statement. The V4 countries are active supporters of Ukraine's aspirations to move closer to European institutions, but says those aspirations cannot be reached without guarantees of the rule of law, fair judicial procedures, and high democratic standards. And finally, in business news, the public joint company Ukrtelecom is planning to hold its first stage of an auction to sell its mobile communications business in late August or early September. At present, 7 applications have been received. Ukrainian mobile operators and European operators interested in entering the Ukrainian market have shown interest in buying the asset. On June 14th, Ukrtelecom's shareholders decided to sell the mobile communications business. Analysts have said the value of the mobile communications business was over $250 million. And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of Ukrainian News Outlook. I'm Keith Parent.
Eugene Wilson was born in Ukraine in 1924 and emigrated to Australia in 1950. His first meeting with history came with the arrival of the Red Committee and the disappearance of his father, who had spoken out against the Bolsheviks. In the second part of this special broadcast from ABC Radio National in Australia, Eugene Wilson continues his recollections of his experience during the Second World War after the German occupation of his village.
One night during the bombardment, Krieger called me. He said, "Eugen, come here." He led me to his room in the kitchen block. Everything in his room was disheveled. He had a portrait of Hitler, the huge frame behind the glass. And that portrait fell down, and as he came in the room, I was following him. He came up and put his heavy boot into the Hitler's face, smashing the glass and swearing his usual Schweinhund, you know, blah, 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 blah. Then he turned to me and said, "Eugen, halt dein Mund zu," which meant, "Eugene, keep your mouth shut." Jawohl, Herr Krieger.
Hello and welcome to Verbatim. I'm Michelle Rayner. Today we present the second part of the wartime experience of Eugene Wilson, who came to Australia after the Allied liberation of Germany in the wake of World War II. In last week's program, Eugene Wilson told interviewer Brian McKenzie about the German invasion of his village in Ukraine and the friendship that he developed with a German soldier who came to stay in his house, Dr. Richard Zimmerman. At the close of last week's episode, Eugene Wilson had been rounded up and, with some of the other men from the village, put on a train bound for a German labour camp in Berlin. Here's part two of Eugene Wilson's story, Goodbye Ukraine.
Every morning about 4 o'clock, you had to dress and get your coffee, so-called coffee. The coffee was just burned oats, and there was always commotion in the kitchen hall because everyone tried to be the last to get the coffee in hope to get some residue of burned oats. And policemen was running around with a rubber hose, hurry up, hurry up, lost, lost, lost. We had to line up in the middle of the camp, 4 abreast. We will march out of the camp, arrive at the station. There will be a special train, so-called Sonderzug, will arrive non-stop till Warschauer Straße. That was the station in Berlin where our factory was. I was put as a helper to a German worker. Our job was to clean the wheels of good trains. The work was so difficult physically. If you imagine being perpetually hungry and such a heavy work that I barely could last the day. And when we will arrive back in the camp, I will just fall on my bed and, you know. I knew that I wouldn't last very long at this particular job. As we would pass through the residential street of the Kaulsdorf, some would ring the bells just simply to wake up Germans. So, of course, there were a lot of complaints. Herr Krieger will be shouting that you so and so and so, you are ringing the bells while you're going to the railway station, so if we'll catch anyone, we'll shoot on the spot. Herr Krieger probably was typical German. Very often, proudly, he would remind that his name, Krieger, in Russian was Voinov, which means he is a fighter. Quite often he would remind us that his name was Voinov. That, of course, it was ironical having a name of Krieger, real fighter, but he had something wrong with his feet. His knees hardly would bend. He would just shuffle instead of lifting his feet. So that prevented him, of course, to be called up in the army. His guidelines were discipline, order, and punctuality. And above all, work. Dr. Schnell, German doctor, she spoke very well Russian. She used to come once a month in camp to have a look at all those that could not work anymore. In my childhood, I had a problem with my heart. And I find it difficult to perform heavy work, so I would like to work in camp. If she could recommend me to Herr Krieger, they called me in the office, and Herr Krieger said, "You would like to work in a camp?" I said, "Yes, if it's possible." "Okay, you work in the kitchen." So from this point on, I was working in the camp. One day, there is a new batch of girls have arrived in the camp. At that time, I was working in the kitchen already. And that's how I saw Tanya in the queue, standing for a soup. Well, she immediately drew my attention, and I think from that point on, my heart started to improve. The rule was that after 8 o'clock, no man should be in a women's barracks. In front of Tanya's bed, there was a curtain. And we were sitting there behind the curtain talking. And suddenly I heard Herr Krieger came in, and I could hear his voice. As he put one hand on the end of the curtain to open it, I tried to sneak behind the other end. He saw me immediately, and I felt this whack between my shoulders. So I had to run, That was the end of 1942. A German army got booked at Stalingrad. Battle of Stalingrad was a turning point in the Second World War. So eventually German army was defeated and started to roll back. At this time, bombardments of Germany was increased. At night, we used to have English bombers coming and bombing. American bombers would come and bomb Berlin during the daytime. Every one of us who was working in the kitchen through the night, we had the orders from Herr Krieger immediately to wake him up as soon as there is a news through the so-called German Drahtfunk, which is wired transmission. Now, one interesting point was we had to wake him up only when the danger level was 15. In other words, German radio used to transmit 8 Achtung, Achtung, Luftgefahr, Stufe 15. Attention, attention, the air danger is stage 15. Bombers are approaching Berlin. Because that news gone right through the city and all defense. You could hear through the night and through the day on this particular communication net what was happening in the air. But when it was announced that danger stage is 15, so once you hear that, you immediately run to Herr Krieger's room, knock on the door, Herr Krieger, Stube 15. So Herr Krieger will be on his feet, immediately dressed up. And then within a few minutes, you will start to hear sirens all over the Berlin. Initially, when the night bombardments of Berlin started, the police used to run through the barracks and getting everyone out. Of course, there was nowhere else to go. And we just stood there outside, you know, and watching what's happening in the sky. Very often watching light blinds shot down and, you know, falling on the city. Towards 1944, bombardment of Berlin were perpetual. 10 o'clock in the morning, by 2 or 3 o'clock in afternoon, 10, 11 at night, 3, 4 in the morning. One night, we heard the approaching bombers coming towards us, towards the Karlsdorf. You could hear it. Within 10, 15 minutes, the camp was sprinkled with eccentrics. Wooden barracks caught fire immediately, and three-quarters of the camp burned out within next half an hour. We couldn't do anything. Tanya's barrack burned down. Administration barrack burns down. The only survived was, unfortunately, bloody police barrack. People were running around. One or two of remaining barracks caught a fire. We tried to extinguish it, but it was pointless. So anyway, in those 15 or 20 minutes, everything was burned down.
While he was in the labour camp in Berlin, Eugene decided that he would try to meet the mother of his German friend, Richard Zimmermann. The two had met earlier on in the war when Zimmermann, a compassionate young doctor, had boarded with Eugene and his mother after the Germans invaded their village.
He wrote to his mother that if you get visit from Eugene, and probably he explained who was I, make sure that you feed him. So I approached Herr Krieger and explained to him what was going on. So he was a bit surprised. He said, all right, you can visit him. So one Sunday, I got on the train and gone to visit them. It was multi-story house, one of those middle-class burger suburb. When I got to the third floor, I found the Zimmermann family. There was a sign on the door. Pressed the button a few times, but there was no answer. Obviously, no one was there. As I was coming down, there was a lady going up, and she looked at me, sort of a stranger, and she said, can I help you? Who do you want to see here? And I said, I was trying to see Frau Zimmermann. She looked at me, and she said, I'm Frau Zimmermann, so would you come with me? So we gone upstairs, she opened the door, walked in, and she said to me, what's all about? As soon as I start to tell her that your son, Richard Zimmermann, was living with us, she immediately, she looked at me with the wide eyes, tears burst out of her eyes. She was crying, and then, anyway, she told me that Richard was missing somewhere in Romania. She kept on crying, and then she said to me, Eugen, I had two sons. One son was killed in Poland, another missing. So she said, we haven't got anyone in family left. She took me to one of the rooms, opened the wardrobe, and she said, this is all Richard's clothing. So it is yours now. In camp, we had a huge pile of briquettes. It seemed like German precision gone wrong somewhere. There was plenty of briquettes, no food. One day I went to Krieger and I said, Herr Krieger, can I take few briquettes for Frau Zimmermann? So on each visit, I used to take about half a dozen. I had briquettes, wrapped them in a parcel. Tanya and myself, we used to visit Zimmermann's. And Frau Zimmermann always had a good meal for us there. For the Christmas of 1943-44, to our surprise, quite a quantity of schnapps was delivered to our camp. And each one of us received some 50 grams maybe or so, little dose of schnapps to celebrate the Christmas. It became more and more obvious that Germany had lost the war, and administration of the camp, including Herr Krieger, they were more often drunk. And through the night, we can hear was constant roar of the Russian artillery, and the horizon was always lit up. You could see it; it was not far away. I was walking across the camp, and suddenly I heard Krieger was calling my name. Eugen, come over here. So I come up and he said, come with me. We gone in his hut. And he said to me, Eugen, tell me what's going to happen to me when the Russians will come. So I said, Herr Krieger, I don't know. Well, he said, and he put his hand in the pocket, drew out the gun, and it said, well, here it is. The 5 bullets for Russians, 1 for me. So I said, oh, Herr Krieger, I don't think it will be that bad. He turned around and reached for a bottle of schnapps, took 2 glasses, filled them in and handed one over to me. He said, well, let's have a drink. And he said, right, we will see what's going to happen. And at this time, Frau Zimmermann has arranged for 2 railway tickets for us. And one morning, Tanya has prepared small suitcase with her belongings. I didn't have anything. And we just walked out of the camp, gone to the railway station, and it was absolute chaos. It was a melee of refugees, wounded soldiers. People were trying to board the trains, and in the meantime, the Russian artillery was already bombarding Berlin. It was impossible to get to the train. Shells were falling on the glass roof of a station, exploding. Glass was flying everywhere. The station was filled with literally thousands and thousands of people. Everyone was trying to get out of Berlin. In all that melee of rushing people, we just gone downstairs, underground of railway station, and we spent night there. Early in the morning, we just edged our way to the upstairs to the platform. Now, this particular day, it was, it must have been 20th of April, which was a birthday of Adolf Hitler. And Russians were especially bombarding Berlin for the occasion as a birthday present. And there was a train arriving, and announcement was made that, ladies and gentlemen, this is a possibly last train out of Berlin, so please do board. I managed to push Tanya inside the carriage, and so eventually we got out of Berlin, and I remember it was a night. Train stopped somewhere in the field, and everyone had to get out. The train was not moving, it was not going ahead because the railway was bombed out. Now, here was the situation. It was absolute pitch dark. You couldn't see anything in front of you. So I remember people just hung up on each other, holding on each other, and all this mess of people was moving in a field which was full of craters, some were falling over and crying for help. We got in one of the trenches. I took my Zimmermann's overcoat. light on the ground, Tanya light with her small case on the ground, and I sort of hedged myself alongside in that pitch black night. I looked out of the trench, and eastern horizon was ablaze. And I think that was the time when the actual battle for Berlin have started. I remember I was woke up by a woman's voice, and she said, "Would you like to have a cup of coffee?" So we went with this woman across the field to her house. Then she asked us what nationality we were. And when I said that we were Russians, and husband of a lady, he was a railway worker, he said, "Well, look, here is a map." He told us how to get to the next station. He knew that the next train will be somewhere around the lunchtime. So when we arrived to the station, the train came in, and there was again that melee of people, of course, you know, refugees. When we got into the carriage, I pushed Tanya forward in front of me, and then when I climbed into the carriage, suddenly there was a gun pointed at my forehead. And I looked, it was a wounded German soldier, and there were quite a number of them. So we moved in a corner, and eventually the door was closed, dry and gone off. In a few hours, we have arrived at Lübeck. And the Russian army was going along the north coast of Germany, and the rumors were that they might even take the town. So we have decided to go for the west. We had traveled about 29 kilometers outside Lübeck and stopped in a small town, Bad Segeberg. Train was not going any further, so there was practically nowhere to stay. But fortunately, we met two Russian women, and they took us to the Shell service station. They lived downstairs, and they said, "You can stay with us, but you have to stay in the attic under the roof." We spent there, I don't remember how many days, but one morning we were woken up by loud clatter on the cobblestones of the street. I come down and I saw British tanks slowly rolling in the town. After the tanks, there was a marching Scottish regiment. It was very surprising to see the soldiers in the skirts with the bagpipes and the rifle over their shoulders, marching into the town and playing this very odd Scottish tune. The town was absolutely quiet. There was no single German in the street. Everyone hid. There was no shot fired. The town just quietly surrendered. And the border was established. It was 29 kilometers to the Russian border. In other words, the motherland was 29 kilometers from us.
Signed the act of unconditional surrender.
War was over, so we knew that our journey through the wartime came to the end. But the new danger loomed for us. At the Yalta conference, agreement was reached between the Allies that, as Stalin demanded, that all former Russian citizens will be forcefully repatriated to Soviet Union. So within a few days, there was, in this little town, Russian repatriation mission has arrived. They settled in one of the big houses in this little town. There were people who went voluntarily. They volunteered to go back to Russia, but there was a number of prisoners of war and the workers like us. They did not want to go back being afraid for their future. So to get the food, one has to register with United Nations Relief Organization. I went to their office, and I remember I walked in the room. There was a gentleman in English uniform. I said to him that I would like to register as a refugee. He asked for my name and where I was born, what country I come from. I said that I come from Soviet Union. So he put his pencil down and he said, my dear fellow, do you want to go back to Russia? I said, no. Well, he said, think about it and come back tomorrow. So next day I saw him, and he registered me. My place of birth was Latvia. The bloody Europe, we had a gutful of it, and Australia was the furthest place from it. So we decided to migrate to Australia. And when we came to Australia, I noticed something I had not seen since my childhood in Ukraine. The golden wheat fields waving in a cool breeze, stretching out to the horizon as if they would never end.
Eugene Wilson. He was interviewed by film producer Brian McKenzie. My thanks today to Eugene Wilson, to interviewer and producer Brian McKenzie, and to Chris Lawson and Kerry Dell for technical production. I'm Michelle Rayner, and I hope you'll join us for more Verbatim, this time next week here on ABC Radio National.
And special thanks once again to ABC Radio National in Australia for this special program, Goodbye Ukraine, the recollections of Eugene Wilson. You're listening to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio, broadcasting from Vancouver Island, Canada, for PCJ Radio.
PCJ Radio would like to make you a winner. PCJ Radio is giving away three Texan 920 World Band receivers to three lucky winners in June, July, and August. In September, we are having a grand giveaway of a brand new SanGen ATS 909X worth $399 to one lucky winner. To enter, let us know how you heard this program with the date and time, and answer the following very simple question. What does radio mean to you? You can send your entries to ats909x@gmail.com. Again, that's ats909x@gmail.com. If you wish to enter by snail mail and receive a small thank you gift for entering, you can find our postal address at www.pcjmedia.com. Winners will be announced on a monthly basis on Media Network Plus. So, good luck!
You'll find the very best in Ukrainian cultural programming here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio, broadcasting Sunday evenings at 6 p.m. in Vancouver, AM 1320 on the radio dial, and online at am1320.com. In Nanaimo, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. on 101.7 FM, and online at chly.ca. Nash Holos airs on shortwave, AM, FM, and internet radio in over 28 countries on the PCJ Radio Network. Podcasts are available at nashholos.com, as well as on the Nash Holos page at pcjmedia.com and on iTunes. На жаль, ми вже скінчили нашу програму, вже час додому і сказати до побачення. Але перед закінченням я хочу залишити вас такими словами мудрості. Розумний на своїх і чужих помилках учиться, а дурень ніколи так не робить, лиш сміється. And our proverb of the week translates as, the wise learn from their mistakes and those of others, but a fool won't. Well, our time is about up, and to take us to the end of our program, a tune and special greetings and congratulations to a special couple from the Fraser Valley, Evelyn and Sadly Shindrick, who recently celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary, and the actual date was July 1st, but they had a celebration for them with family and friends on the 28th of July. And greetings are going out to them from son Perry, wishing them the very best and expressing his personal thanks for their love and inspiration over the years. And greetings also going out from their loving family and friends. We'll be wrapping up the show with a tune from the bridal couple because, in addition to creating a beautiful family, they have created and still do create beautiful music together. They have recorded several CDs and they perform at very many venues across the Lower Mainland area. So, from their CD, Ukrainian Favorites, the West Coast dulcimer duo, Evelyn and Sadly Shindrick, and the Mukachevo Kolomeka. I'm Paulette Demchik-McQuarrie. On behalf of all of us here at Nash Holos and PCJ Radio, thanks so much for listening. Until next time, do pobacenia.